And now it's time for us to discuss more of the headlines and simple keywords with Adam joining us via Zoom. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Lena, and happy National Unicorn Day.
No.
It is.
In the United States?
I think it's a... It came up on my Windows notification.
In Korea?
In Korean. But I think it's a worldwide thing. Might be something in the US. I don't know.
Somebody out there, fact check for us. Unicorn Day, do you mark the occasion? Is it silly? Do we need a little bit of silliness in the world?
I don't know. It is a National Unicorn Day. Yeah.
What a colorful way to start off our Tuesday. Exactly. Thanks for that. All right, let's get started with keyword news. We have many headlines to cover. We're going to start out with, yes, the successful satellite launch. Our first keyword of the day.
Launch successful.
So Korea has successfully launched its second homemade spy satellite into orbit via a SpaceX rocket from Florida. Conditions were right. All is well with the world. What's the latest, Adam?
That's right. The Defense Ministry said the rocket was launched from Kennedy Space Center at 7:17 p.m. on Sunday local time and delivered the satellite into orbit approximately 45 minutes later. So pretty much on schedule, according to the timeline that we mentioned yesterday. It made successful communications with the ground station about 2 hours and 40 minutes after the launch. That was the moment the launch was deemed successful. Now, the satellite is part of South Korea's plan to keep an eye on North Korea, of course, more closely, using a total of 5 satellites. So we're 2 out of the 5 already. Now, while the first satellite is equipped with electro-optical and infrared sensors capable of capturing detailed images of the Earth's surface, the latest satellite has synthetic aperture radar sensors, or SAR, that can collect data regardless of weather conditions. That's also something we mentioned yesterday. The satellite, along with future SAR satellites, the remaining 3 will have that SAR technology in it, will allow Seoul to monitor specific targets within North Korea at 2-hour intervals. Now, the so-called 425 project also includes the development and launch of small and ultra-small reconnaissance satellites by 2030, to further reduce revisit times over the Korean Peninsula to under 30 minutes, so we could have better images at more frequent intervals. And Defense Minister Shin Won-sik told reporters that North Korea could also launch a second spy satellite as early as the middle of this month as well, in kind of a response. There's been this kind of tense rivalry or battle, if you will, of spy satellite launches between the South and North. And so... the second one for South Korea has been successful. 3 more likely to come very soon.
But I mean, we must highlight the fact that the technological gap between North and South Korea, there's a pretty big discrepancy there. But nonetheless, because tensions in the peninsula has been intense already, it just kind of adds to it, kind of a version of a space race, if you will.
It is kind of a version of a space race. And yes, the technology differences are quite wide, of course. North Korea is more about honing in their existing technology and trying to make subtle improvements to it. For Korea, it's more about using various types of technology, and they seem to be successfully implementing them.
All right, let's move on to our second keyword. D-1, just 1 day away till the general elections. The moment is here. Now, the last-ditch effort will be loud and fierce. Our second keyword of the day.
Rallying support.
So the political battle in Seoul is heating up as rival parties make their final appeals for support a day before the election. I mean, we're talking about head-to-head, neck-and-neck races in key battlegrounds in Seoul City. What's the latest, Adam?
Yeah, so today is the last day of campaigning that is allowed. Of course, tomorrow people will be heading to the polls to elect their representative for their region. Now, this election is particularly crucial for the leaders of the DP and the PPP. Han Dong-un, the PPP interim chief, plans to focus on preventing the opposition from gaining a supermajority in the National Assembly again. He'll continue to criticize both Lee Jae-myung and Cho-guk for their roles in previous administrations. Lee Jae-myung, the DP chief, on the other hand, aims to highlight the need to judge the current Yoon administration for its failures. Both parties have chosen strategic locations in Seoul for their final campaign rallies. Han and other key figures from the PPP will gather at Cheonggye Stream, selected for its central location, and symbolic importance. The move is seen as an effort to mobilize votes, especially in light of the party's slight disadvantage in the Han River Belt area, according to recent polls. Now, the DP has chosen to hold its final rally in Yongsan near the presidential office. Now, this choice underscores the party's focus on critiquing the Yoon government. He will also attend a court hearing in the morning and is expected to criticize the government's various failures in a press conference thereafter. Smaller parties are also making large efforts as well. The New Future Party, that's formed by the former Prime Minister Lee Nak-yeon, plans to end its campaign at Gwanghwamun Sejong Center, a location with historical significance related to past candlelight vigils. The proximity of their rally to the PPP's event also may lead to kind of a tense atmosphere. The New Reform Party, with the ex-PPP chief Lee Jun-suk running in the highly contested Hwasong Dongtan area, is considering concluding its campaign there. He has interestingly been engaging in a non-stop 48-hour campaign effort since yesterday. So, yeah, does he have enough energy to carry on for today? I mean, certainly has been a very busy schedule for him as well. But of course, these new parties, eyes are on them as well. Usually, attention is not really paid that much to kind of smaller parties. But there's more interest this year around because they are headed by some political heavyweights like Lee Nak-yeon and Lee Jun-suk and Cho-guk for that matter as well. So, yeah, we'll have to see how well they do in this last day of campaigning, whether they are able to sway voters who are pretty much undecided, or try and rally their support bases as well.
All right, we'll wait and see. Today is the last day of campaigning for general elections. I can't remember. And records show the last time that we went to general elections, we weren't this excited or divided. very invested, high stakes for both the ruling and the main opposition. So we'll wait and see. Let's move on to our third keyword of the day.
Expand housing.
So President Yoon has vowed to increase housing supply through faster redevelopment and rebuilding projects, criticizing the previous administration's real estate policies for causing more hardship on the public. So he wants to do kind of a 180, ease regulations so that we can build new homes in a speedy manner and get rid of old ones.
Yeah, so he's doubling down on his previous kind of policy pledges, pretty much citing the same reasons, blaming the Moon Jae-in administration. And he made the vow this time while chairing a meeting on urban housing supply, as he stressed that now is the golden time to normalize the housing market. Now, he highlighted the challenges in supplying homes, such as high interest rates and increased construction costs. And he promised to remove bad housing regulations, as he put it, to encourage more housing development. And he pledged to expedite redevelopment and reconstruction projects to swiftly provide the desired housing to the people at the desired location. He also mentioned setting up a fast-track system for better cooperation among government bodies and local governments to progress the so-called New Village Project, which aims to renovate old houses and villas. And he condemned the past government for focusing solely on curbing demand with punitive property taxes, blaming speculative issues for price increase, which led to a shortage of supply and a surge in prices amid a global low interest rate environment. And he pointed out that from May 2017 to April 2022, apartment prices in Seoul nearly doubled. But since his government's inception, there's been a 14.1% decrease in prices, indicating a return to market stability. So he's touting that some of his policies are actually working. And he outlines achievements like deregulating overheated housing areas, easing redevelopment standards, lowering property taxes, and temporarily excluding multi-homeowners from increased taxes as well. So those are pretty much 180s on the policies that were implemented in the previous administration.
All right. I mean, it's not the president that's just can spearhead these projects alone. So we'll have to wait for the results of, I don't know, the elections.
Yes, exactly.
All right, let's move on to our fourth keyword of the day.
Met Talks.
So after the election, doctor groups have agreed to announce their unified stance against the government's plan to increase medical school quotas. Meanwhile, the government hinted that reducing the planned 2,000 slots annually might not be entirely off the table, opening up the possibility for more discussions. Maybe not scrap the plan, but lessen the quota, for example. But it's not easy, is it? Government is not a single entity, and the medical community is not a single entity, is it?
Both are very huge in scale, so exactly. Yes, so, of course, it'll be very tough in getting that kind of unified stance, especially when it comes to the Korean Medical Association and other doctors' groups as well, because there's been some sort of rift and internal conflict about how they're going to go about engaging in these talks. Now, no additional medical students have submitted leave of absence applications yesterday, even as some medical schools have restarted classes online. So there's some sort of solace in that as well for the government anyway. Now, the government continued to show its willingness to engage in dialogue, offering a more conciliatory approach. Health Minister Cho Kyung-hong said the government is open to talks if the medical community can present a more unified and reasonable alternative based on solid evidence. So they were pretty adamant about that number of 2,000, but it does seem that they can be a bit flexible on it. But the health minister did defend the decision to increase the admissions by 2,000, describing it as well-researched and based on extensive discussions with the medical sector, but it is open to negotiation. Now, the government has also dismissed the idea proposed by some in the medical community to delay the increase in medical student admissions by 1 year. The government's position comes as a response to recent moves by the KMA towards initiating dialogue. The KMA's emergency committee announced a plan for a joint press conference with other medical associations to discuss the government's push for more medical student admissions. Yet internal disagreements, especially between the incoming president and the current emergency committee, might complicate these efforts. There seems to be a bit of a disagreement on how they should set about their stance and their position when going into negotiations. The president-elect has expressed dissatisfaction with the current negotiation approach, highlighting a significant division within the KMA. Basically, there's some hardliners and those who are a bit moderate in terms of and a bit more willing to negotiate and have a little bit of more of a wriggle room. So yeah, the KMA and all the doctors groups are huge in scale as well. So of course, not it's going to be tough to try and get everyone on board in a unified stance. So those talks in itself within them is going to take some time, let alone talks with the government.
All right. I mean, usually how things move along is with general consensus, right? Like any democratic process, but we'll wait and see. It's no simple matter at hand. Let's move on to our final keyword of the day.
Childcare expansion.
Soon, public workers will be able to use up to 2 hours per day for childcare. That means taking 2 hours from their working hours and using it for childcare, extending the benefit to include children up to 8 years old. Tell us the details of the plan.
Right. So, yes, this basically means that parents working in the public sector could take 2 hours from work each day to care for their children, now including those with kids in second grade or younger. And they can do this by either coming to work later or leaving earlier. Now, currently, this benefit is for parents with kids under five. Parents can use this time for up to 36 months, up from the current 24 months. They can take paid leave for 2 hours each day to take care of their kids. And this change comes because there's a high demand for childcare, not only for very young kids, but also for kids in the early grades of elementary school as well, hence the expansion of the eligibility age. Now, if a government worker has more than two children, they can take more days off for family care as well. Right now, they could take up to 3 days of paid leave, but with more kids, they can get one extra day for each child. Also, new government workers with one to less than 4 years on the job will get more vacation days, up to 16. Additionally, the plan gets rid of the 10-year limit on saved vacation days to encourage taking longer breaks from work as well. So there won't be an expiration on the days of saved vacation days. So you can choose to save them up for a longer extended holiday or to use it how you please, if you're working in the public sector, that is. Now, the government is also expanding the bereavement leave as well for the death of a sibling from 1 to 3 days. The proposed changes are set for a public review from September 9th to October 20th, and they are expected to be implemented in the second half of this year. There's also going to be more benefits for the fire service as well. So firefighters are being encouraged to have more kids and care for their kids as well, with more expanded benefits for them also.
All right. Thank you very much, Adam, for today's coverage. And our listeners have informed us, yes, a little bit of fact check. It is International Unicorn Day, celebrated on April 9th. It's a whimsical day dedicated to paying homage to the magical and mythical unicorn. It's a day of fun, sparkle, and a dash of magic.
Wow.
And I kind of love it.
A dash of magic. Yes, indeed.
Just a little bit of fun there.
Yeah. I mean, it's good to know that it's an international day. So, yeah, not isolated to one country. To celebrate it, why not?
Thank you very much, Anna, for today's coverage. The fun and the deep.
Yes, you're very welcome.
See you tomorrow.
Happy Unicorn Day.
Happy Unicorn Day.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.